From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week, it's a very special Register Radio. Dan Burke and Jeanette DeMello discuss Islam, last week's terror attacks in Paris, and how a Catholic should respond. They'll be talking with Robert Riley, the author of the book, The Closing of the Muslim Mind. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register, and Dan Burke, executive director of the Register. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, this is a very important topic, so we're going to devote the entire program to it. Our guest, Robert Riley, has taught at the National Defense University and has served in the office of the Secretary of Defense. He participated in Operation Iraqi Freedom in 2003 as senior advisor to the Iraqi Ministry of Information. Mr. Riley has served in the White House as a special assistant to the president and in the U.S. Information Agency, both in D.C. and abroad. He is author of a number of books on Islam. The latest one is The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis.
Robert, thanks for being with us. It's a difficult time for those who love freedom and freedom of speech, and we've had this tragic situation in Paris and, of course, in other parts of the world with Boko Haram and the tragedies there. But before we jump in and talk about these bigger issues, I wanted to help our audience to better orient to what it is we're talking about. If you could, give us a little bit of basic primer. You know, what is Islam? What is a Muslim? What's the relationship there? And what are the different, in a general way, what are the different sects that we're speaking of? And then we'll move into more modern events.
Sure. Well, Islam arose in the 7th century, during the first half of which Muhammad thought he was receiving revelations from God directly through the angel Gabriel. And these revelations informed him of the following things, that both Judaism and Christianity were corrupted forms of his initial revelation. And therefore, he was going to give his revelation one last time to Muhammad, which is why Muhammad is called the seal of the prophets. Now, this revelation differed substantially from both the Old Testament and the New Testament, not only in superseding their revelations and claiming that they had been corrupted, but in the way in which people were supposed to live, and in the missionary zeal with which Islam was to convert the world, either through dawah, which is proselytization, or with jihad, which is by the sword. And we know historically that Islam spread with incredible rapidity through the sword, and it conquered a space much larger than the ancient Roman Empire. In fact, it was the largest empire in history at its time. And with that conquest came mass conversions of Christians. The whole Middle East was Christian. North Africa was Christian. And as we know today, the presence of Christians in both those places is marginal and growing smaller. So it was given the universal missionary a zeal from Christianity, and it took most of its material from Judaism, in a very legalistic religion that stipulates how you are to behave in every aspect of your life, from the bathroom to the direction of prayer, the times of prayers, the kinds of prayers, etc. As Islam developed its theology, it accepted a concept of God that what we call voluntaristic. That is, God is pure will and power. He is not reason and justice. He can do anything he wants. He is inaccessible to man. He's incomprehensible to man. He is so omnipotent that he does everything. Man is not so much as potent. In other words, what you do is what Allah actually is doing. Cause and effect does not exist in the natural world. Everything is done directly by Allah. If you release a stone and it hits the ground and you say, the stone fell because of gravity, you have committed the sin of shirk, blasphemy, because you're attributing a power to someone other than Allah. It's Allah who makes the stone fall. So this became the general accepted theology in Sunni Islam, which, of course, is the majority expression of the faith. The other part of Islam is known as Shiism, which developed after the fourth caliph was killed. There was a dispute within Islam as to whether the caliph should be selected by the tribal leaders, or whether it should be a direct male descendant of Muhammad. The Shia believed it should be the direct descendant of Muhammad. The majority Sunni said no, it's one of the Quraysh tribal leaders. And this led to a civil war within Islam, which has resumed today with a particular viciousness, as we can see in places like Iraq and Syria, and even Pakistan, where the Sunnis are slaughtering the Shia, and the Shia, of course, are fighting back and slaughtering the Sunnis. I would also add that that's not the only civil war in Islam. Within Sunni Islam, there is also a terrible war taking place over what Islam means, and whether what jihad means, and whether one is obligated today to slaughter unbelievers and force Christians into the Muslim faith. And one side of that fight is saying yes, and using attacks on the West in order to galvanize those within Islam whom they're trying to attract to this fighting creed. Well, that's kind of a real capsule view of what is taking place. But I'd say the most dangerous thing about Sunni Islam is its rejection of reason. Within Christianity, even though there have been similar movements toward voluntarism and occasionalism being the denial of cause and effect in the natural world, they were arrested by that arresting statement at the beginning of the Gospel of St. John, that in the beginning was the Word. The Gospel is in Greek, and the word is logos, and logos translates as reason. So God introduces himself in the Gospel of St. John as reason. So any anti-rational movements within Christianity eventually bump up against this revelation. In Islam, there isn't a comparable statement in the Quran, though it's not necessarily an anti-rational. The Quran is very much like the Old Testament and very unlike the New. But within the theology, it developed that God is not reason, he's above reason, and that reason is incapable of knowing the difference between good and evil. The only way one can know that is through the revelation in the Quran and the Sunnah. So that this let us say, reduces the role of reason in life to almost nothing. And this is why the Muslim world, the Sunni Muslim world, is so dysfunctional. It's dysfunctional because it has a deformed theology. In other words, it has the wrong idea of who God is.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio. I'm here with Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief, and Bob Riley, the author of The Closing of the Muslim Mind, talking about Islam. Now, Bob, what I've heard from recent surveys of Muslim communities around the world, it's not the minority of Muslims that are radicalized, but it's actually the majority. The basis of that claim is the desire of the majority of Muslims around the world to implement Sharia law or the caliphate. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, it depends what you mean by these terms. But the caliphate obviously has a very strong resonance because of the role it played in Muslim history. There are two problems here. One was dramatized by the Arab Spring, in which there were such hopes in the West that finally the jackboot of tyranny and authoritarianism was ending in the Middle East, and these people were going to assume the blessings of self-government and liberty. But when you check in the Middle East and places like Egypt and ask if they believe the principle without which you cannot have democratic constitutional government, that is, that all people are created equal, you will find a rejection of that. They don't believe that. They don't believe men and women are created equal. They don't believe Muslims and, well, to say the least, Jews or Coptic Christians are created equal, and therefore they can't be accorded equality before the law. So you have within mainstream Sunni Islam this enormous stumbling block to the development of any constitutional rule. Also, Dan, as we see the Middle East disintegrating from its post-colonial borders, it's becoming apparent that there is no natural political form for that area to assume. In other words, the caliphate is really the only political form that is natural to Islam, at least to Sunni Islam. And when it's not there, it's unclear how they're supposed to organize themselves. And since they denigrate reason and are based on the primacy of will and force, the only way they have of settling things is the sword, to fight it out and exhaust each other until some agglomeration of tribal tribes or sectarian groups accept a ceasefire.
I think that based upon the idea of the caliphate, the idea of the Islamic State as it's gaining power, and really there's nothing stopping it right now, I guess I've been a little surprised when people say that this most recent attack there in France is like something to the caliber of 9/11 there in France. It's something that's changing the reality. What do you say to that? Why is this event that occurred last week something that people are looking at as being so changing?
I don't think it is changing at all. I think the response to it is superficial. Mm-hmm. To have these hundreds of thousands of people chanting or carrying signs saying "Je suis Charlie," mm-hmm. After the blasphemous satirical magazine whose editor and staff were murdered shows that there really isn't a whole lot of substance behind this. Mm-hmm. And President François Hollande, the French president's reflexive response to these despicable murders was, and I quote him, "Those who committed these acts have nothing to do with the Muslim religion," unquote. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good luck to you then.
Right.
You're not going to resurrect. Right? They certainly think they were Muslim. They were screaming Allahu Akbar as they slaughtered people. So this, it's not serious. It's not serious. And the United States is not serious about this either under this administration, and indeed under the past administration, of coming to even name the source of the problem in the ideas that produce this behavior.
When we return, we'll continue our very important discussion with Robert Riley. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
I'm Brian Patrick, and here at EWTN News Nightly, we're very much aware our world is changing rapidly. The news can be so troubling, but it helps to get it in the context of Catholic teaching. That's why I encourage you to watch EWTN News Nightly and to subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register. Always faithful, in-depth coverage of crucial issues like religious freedom, the sanctity of all human life, traditional marriage, and Pope Francis, his travels, his powerful homilies, and great features like one of my favorites on St. Joseph, provider and protector. Subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register and watch EWTN News Nightly, the perfect combination for faithful Catholics who want the news, who want the truth.
For a free 3-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 3 free issues.
Let
let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Let's continue our discussion now with Robert Riley, the author of The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis.
Bob, so you don't sense any positive shift in the mind in the West to really properly identifying the...
No, absolutely none. And the self-delusion and what I call sort of a Stockholm syndrome is continuing. A few people are getting close to the truth. I think the most courageous statement made recently was by President al-Sisi of Egypt, where at Al-Azhar he spoke to the imams and Muslim scholars and told them that a religious revolution in Islam was needed. And how was it that we arrived at this understanding, you know, that 1.5 billion people need to slaughter the rest of humanity to serve their religion? So General al-Sisi made a tremendously courageous statement. After that, by the way, he went and attended the Coptic Christmas Mass, something an Egyptian president hasn't done for within memory.
What do you think the likelihood is that a movement could rise up to bring about that kind of revolution?
I'd say the odds of that are extremely slow, because all of the intellectual trends are heading in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. And the Muslim intellectual reformers, a number of whom, by the way, I work with, receive no support from the West and are personally endangered because of the reforms they call for. So for the West to recognize this problem, you would think would lead them to support the very people whose success within the Muslim world is necessary for our own safety. Yet I have seen for more than 10 years no help given these people. And that's because we don't want to recognize the nature of the problem that they themselves are very frank about. So if we want to keep saying with President Obama and President Hollande that this has nothing to do with Islam, good luck to you.
And what would they say is the fundamental aspect that needs to change, or the fundamental thing that needs to be recognized with much greater force and much wider recognition?
The theology of Islam, the deformed theology. I can just give you a little taste of what they sound like. And I'm going to quote
please.
To you by an Iranian philosopher, Abdul Karim Sarush, who, of course, lives in exile in the West. When he's discussing the idea of, you know, if you can have democracy in Islam, and he answered, quote, "You need some philosophical underpinning, even theological underpinning, in order to have a real democratic system. Your God cannot be a despotic God anymore. A despotic God would not be compatible with a democratic rule, with the idea of rights. So you have to change your idea of God," unquote. So that's what has to be done. There's another quote that I think dramatizes this kind of effectively, because it was given by the late King Hussein of Jordan. I think this was his last interview before he died. And I have to give you a little background so you understand the quote. In the 9th century, there was a huge theological struggle within Islam over these theological questions of whether God is a God of reason or if he's just a God of sheer force and will and power. And I'm afraid the latter view won through force by suppressing the school of rational theology that was called the Mu'tazilites. Here's the question King Hussein was asked. "Would you agree that the Muslim decline can be dated from the 9th century, when Islam missed the chance to become the religion of reason and moderation by crushing the Mu'tazilite movement?" King Hussein answers, "That is essentially correct. And we must do what we can to change that now."
Wow.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we're talking with Bob Riley, the author of The Closing of the Muslim Mind. I'm here with Jeanette DeMello, and we're working to help Catholics understand this crisis, this challenging situation in our culture and worldwide. Bob, my question to you is really about... How does the individual Catholic deal with this? So there are macro level issues, right? We have political structures, the way we vote, the way we attempt to manage our country through our freedoms and our rights. But what about on an individual basis? I mean, what do you do with the Muslim that you interact with on the street? Because there are very few communities in our country that don't have some kind of Muslim population.
Well, I would say, first of all, don't prejudge them. The Muslims in the United States, for the most part, have fled the dysfunctional Middle East or Pakistan or places like that because they don't want to live under this kind of tyranny. I've worked with Muslims for years. And that they're extraordinarily fine people and fine American citizens. So what you do is you treat them with respect and with charity. And you can also keep in mind the advice of St. Thomas Aquinas when his fellow Dominicans asked him, how are we supposed to deal with these Muslims? And St. Thomas said, well, you can't deal with them from our revelation because they don't accept it. And, and you can't deal with them from their revelation because we don't accept it. Therefore, you have to treat them as natural men. What he meant by that is through your reason. That's how you approach them. Now, the problem there is that some Muslims don't accept themselves as natural men, nor do they allow reason any integrity. But you should be able to find that out fairly soon in a conversation.
I think that Pope Francis has been an example of this, this attempt to have dialogue, to discuss from the point of view of natural man, to really call for respect. I think he is a great example. I mean, just to add to this point of being able to not have that preconceived notion, but to enter into respect. Are there others who are doing it well that we can look at and try to understand how this takes place, how this understanding and respect should take place?
Well, I think to be blunt, Jeanette, it's more important to understand how it shouldn't take place.
Okay.
In the sense that you don't want to base any relationship on an illusion.
Okay.
Or a misunderstanding of what Islam is, or indeed of what Catholicism is. And I'm afraid many of the interreligious dialogues are phony because they don't take that into account. And Benedict XVI was always very frank about that. He was for dialogue, but he said we have to begin. The precondition for dialogue is respect for freedom of conscience. In other words, we're not going to arrive at that through the dialogue or at the end of the dialogue. That's the precondition for the dialogue. And I'm afraid many people don't understand that when they're... And in fact, it's even worse. We let Muslim Brotherhood spawned organizations in the United States dominate the representation of Muslims in this country. And they are precisely the ones with whom you can't have a real dialogue because they follow the Muslim Brotherhood ideology and they marginalize the majority of Muslims in this country who don't accept that point of view. If I can do a little advertisement for myself, I wrote a monograph on this subject called The Prospects and Perils of Catholic-Muslim Dialogue.
Sure.
In which I go into this thing in some detail, and I also go over in detail how the Catholic Church in the United States has conducted that dialogue and where it's been fruitful and where it hasn't been.
Well, very good. We'll make sure to get that book in our show notes so our listeners can find it. Also, Father C. John McCloskey wrote a review of A Closing of the Muslim Mind, which is on our website as well. So our listeners can certainly look there for more information about this this very important topic and the work that you've done in this area.
By the way, Jeanette, I just simply add, The Closing of the Muslim Mind is being translated into Arabic.
Oh, wow.
And that is being done at the request of Muslims. In other words, the Arab Muslim intellectual reformers have said, we need this work in the Middle East in Arabic.
That's great. That's a huge step, I think, that they would be open to discussing something which basically says they have lost their minds in a large way. So it's important that they research and really understand how to get back this intellectual tradition that was lost.
Reason. And
right.
To understand that reason is a gift from God, to come to know him through his creation, mm-hmm. and to come to know how to serve him and how to know the difference between what is good and evil.
That's right. You know, so much of what you've said, especially going back to the beginning of Islam and how it has struggled over the years, is very important for us to understand. These factions and this dialogue has taken place within Islam itself. It isn't necessarily the West judging Islam and saying, hey, you've lost reason, you've lost your mind. Even within Islam, that has been evident, that conversation, that dialogue has taken place, and this unfortunate thing has won out. So I really do appreciate that history that you provided us.
Well, Jeanette, to dramatize it for you, let me give a quote from the Muslim thinker who is regarded by many to this day as the second most important Muslim next to Muhammad, and that is Muhammad al-Ghazali, who is the one who really performed the coup de grace on philosophy and reason in the Muslim world. He said, once it arrives upon the truth of the Prophet, the mind must cease to act.
It's a powerful quote, and we're going to have to end with that. Thank you again, Bob.
Thank you, Dan. Thank
all
you,
the great work that you're doing, and we'll point folks to your book and other resources you want us to put up at ncregister.com, which is where our listeners can find more information.
Thank you so much.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thank you so much for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, Dan, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.